When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The show goes on. This is the official show on the Fish on First podcast channel. It'll take me a little bit to get used to that. Bear with me. I'm Eli Sussman, managing editor of Fish Stripes, where we cover your Miami Marlins every day in our own way, as well as Marlins adjacent topics like the World Baseball Classic wrapping up at Lone Depot Park. If you are subscribed to the Fish Stripes podcast, you should still be subbed to this new rebranded channel, Fish on First. I made it as clear as I possibly could that this is still what you're getting from the Fish Stripes staff. And all our friends, all our special guests, it's also going to be here. It's going to hopefully be bigger and better than ever as we join the Fans First Sports Network. That's the acronym at the bottom of the new pod logo. Going separate from SB Nation after several years, at least on the podcast side, teaming up with a network of other team-specific pods. And we're going to collaborate so much with each other, get best practices, and you're going to win at the end of that. We feel we're going to put together better content in a more accessible way for you. If for whatever reason you weren't already subbed to the channel, please do so. Just find Fish on First wherever you get your pods. Perfect opportunity to rate and review the podcast if you have not already done so. It's going to be the same shows you're used to and more, and a lot more, as we strive to make this the ultimate place for Marlins audio coverage. Me personally, the official show, kind of like I've done in previous years, this should be a twice-a-week pod. On Mondays, typically myself flying solo, talking all things Marlins, and then on Thursdays, bringing on guests and co-hosts to walk us through whatever is going on, whatever on our minds. I'll have a lot more details about this on our site, on social media. You can still find us on Fish Stripes in most places, though we do have a special podcast account now on Twitter, Fish on First, pretty easy there. You can follow that to stay really on top of what we're doing on the pod with all our shows. So I'm going to take a deep breath. We'll come back on the other side of this and talk about the Marlins in the World Baseball Classic. Seven players, their participation has all been concluded at this point. We're going to review what it is that they did, what we learned, how it maybe affects our outlook moving into the regular season that is just a week and a half away. Stick with me. I am guilty of underestimating exactly how massive this World Baseball Classic would be on so many levels, most obviously from the fans' perspective, to see so many of these games sell out at Lone Depot Park, even during the earlier rounds of the tournament, much less as we reach these final stages. It's just automatic that there's packed to the gills to see who is ultimately going to win this thing. More importantly, from the players, it started with, of course, the stars of the game actually wanting to participate, actually getting excited about it. And then you can really see how seriously they've taken the competition. For those who have never been to the MLB playoffs, and even for those that can, that's been the biggest surprise, is how they see these exhibitions in relation to that. They're the furthest thing from an exhibition, even if it's separate from Major League Baseball. It's been amazing to understand exactly how important it is for these players to represent their countries, to try to win this thing at a time where international baseball competition, there just isn't a whole lot of it outside of the constructs of the WBC. And we've reached a level where just about everybody that's playing in this tournament is taking it as seriously as possible and understanding that it is kind of an unprecedented opportunity to have the best of your country alongside you and compete against the best of these other countries, and ultimately somebody is going to win. As is always the case when you're dealing with small samples, and these are the smallest possible samples, you can't read much into the actual stats that individual players put up, all that stuff in these really microscopic samples. That's besides the point. Yet, I think these experiences are extremely meaningful to just about everybody involved, and I thought they were worth this whole episode to kind of dive into what we saw out there. We're going to make this Marlins-centric, because as I'm recording this, all the Marlins active players participating have since been eliminated, and somewhat surprisingly so. Beginning with the Dominican Republic, you had three Marlins there, all veteran major leaguers, and the ace of their rotation, Sandy Alcantara, obviously coming off his National League Cy Young Award victory. He only ends up making one start in the tournament against Venezuela. And so what we saw from Sandy in that one is the velocity was there. His in mid-season form, hitting triple digits pretty regularly with his fastball, throwing some of his off-speed stuff in the mid-90s as well. That was not the problem.
1-2. Got it.
Yet, he did get into a couple very deep jams. His command was just not there in this particular game. Plenty of bad misses, on especially inside and outside the zone. And there were flashes where you saw vintage Sandy, where he had those sinkers riding inside to right-handed batters that would get either weak foul balls or soft contact. Overall, this was against a pretty deep Venezuelan lineup. He struggled. He grinded through it. And he, with a pitch count in place, it was a maximum of 65 pitches during pool play, which is where he made the start. He was never going to get through it. He was never going to get deep into the game due to all the work that he needed to put in just to get out, but he almost had what I would call a quality start under the circumstances. In the fourth inning, nearly worked out of a bases-loaded jam when only one run had been scored to that point, and couldn't quite do it. Allowed this, I think it was a two-run single with two outs in that inning.
1-2. Peralta, line drive base hit to right field. One run is in. Here comes the throw. It's cut off.
His final line from his lone start in the WBC, 3 2/3 innings, 5 hits allowed, 3 runs all earned. Allowed a home run to, who was that, Anthony Santander, most likely, and also 3 walks and only 2 strikeouts in this outing for Sandy. Again, this is just the smallest of small samples. He has since come back to the Marlins, and in his one spring start since then, 5 2/3 scoreless innings. So clearly not affecting at all his ramp up for the regular season in terms of getting stretched out for those games and pitching in such a way that can get him through those games efficiently when he's not facing the very best that Venezuela has ever assembled on a single roster. Even so, I mean, his standards are as high as anybody. Despite being at the top of the mountain last year, he's somebody who's driven to continue to get even better. And I'm sure he was frustrated that he was not quite able to go as long as he wanted in that particular game. So then we go to Johnny Cueto. Johnny Cueto ended up starting what was the elimination game. The way that it's set up with the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico, in their final pool play game, that determined who would finish second in the pool behind Venezuela in advance. That was Cueto's first start. And similar to Sandy, what stuck out pretty immediately is that the velo was exactly what you wanted. It was higher than he was throwing in his previous spring appearances for the Marlins, topping out at 94, and doing so with really exceptional commands. One of the most engaging tweets that our Fish Traps account has had since the turn of the new year was me getting hyped up about a 94-mile-per-hour painted fastball to strike out, to get a strikeout and end the first inning against Puerto Rico in that elimination game, throwing it with such conviction that you can't help but be really encouraged about this version of Cueto and building off what he did last year in order to get the Marlins to sign him in the first place.
The full Cueto, strike three call.
But things fell apart pretty quickly for Cueto after that. There was some shakiness in the second inning, and then the third, he wasn't able to get even a single out. The wheels completely came off. He was removed, having only recorded six outs in that game. Unlike Sandy, he had his control. Like, he was throwing plenty of strikes in this one. I think over 80% strike percentage. Is just the precision of those pitches was inconsistent. There were times when he was painting the corners, and there were others where he was throwing meatballs and getting and paying for it pretty dearly. The final line for Cueto against Puerto Rico, two innings pitched, allowed four hits, three runs all earned, a home run, no walks, and two strikeouts. That's all we saw from him in that one. The third Marlin on the DR, and the one who had even the smallest involvement with their team during what was a fairly stunning elimination during pool play, Gene Segura, because the most stacked area of the DR roster was the infield. They even had Vladimir Guerrero Jr. kind of be removed from that opening round because of an injury, and even still, Segura could not get on the field. Just two plate appearances during pool play. Both times it was a late-inning pinch hitter. He had one of the more unusual walk-offs you'll ever see. He came in as he made his debut pinch hitting. I think this was against Israel, and hit a two-run ground rule double that put the DR up 10 and activated the mercy rule that the tournament has in play. Then his one other plate appearance was in that Puerto Rico game as a pinch hitter in the ninth inning against Edwin Diaz, and he struck out in that instance as Edwin closed out the game before, of course, having his extremely bizarre injury during the celebration in the aftermath of that. So just two plate appearances for Gene Segura, two runs batted in for his participation in this tournament. Came back quickly and rejoined the Marlins active roster for spring training, and then immediately had a multi-hit game. There was an interesting piece from Jordan McPherson of the Miami Herald about the mixed emotions that go into play for somebody like Segura. It was so important for him to represent his country. I did see a separate video from La Vida Baseball where he describes why the WBC was more significant to him than the World Series that he played in just the previous fall with the Phillies. That being said, he didn't actually get to play very much at all. Only two plate appearances over the course of what was more than a week away from the Marlins team at a time where he is being cast as an everyday player for this team, and getting those plate appearances in some sort of competitive environment is extremely important. So they'll do as best they can to make up for that lost time for Segura now that he's back in camp. Just an interesting wrinkle in this. As a quick aside, even though there's there's no perfect timing to do a WBC without interfering with the regular season, these players are involved in Major League Baseball and otherwise, I think this is the best compromise to keep it in March as it currently is, where these players are, for the most part, thankfully, mostly healthy. The only injuries we've seen during the WBC have been freaky ones that are outside what you usually expect in baseball setting. So the participation is pretty good. The pitchers are a little bit ahead of the hitters that we've seen overall. Even so, I think this still leaves a little bit of time at the other end for Segura to get caught up the way that he wants to on the hitting side, to get ready to play for the regular season. And I think overall, this has been pretty satisfying. It's been, from a fan's perspective, certainly, this seems like the best compromise. It just, when you have it adjacent to the spring training games, it's been no contest, at least for me. I'd be interested in hearing other people's personal experiences. I've just found it so hard to even faint interest in these exhibition games in the Grapefruit League when you have this alternative going on that everybody involved is taking with the uttermost seriousness. It's been like it's Christmas coming early. It's the regular season starting early, and even a more heightened version of that, to my pleasant surprise from that perspective. On the other side of this break, we'll get into the four other Marlins players who were participants during the WBC. Stick around here on Fish on First. Moving over to the newly eliminated Team Venezuela, they also had three Marlins on the roster. We need to begin with Luis Arraez. He was not exactly lighting it up in spring training games entering this tournament, and but he really, in a very unconventional way, he shone brightly on this stage. What's first worth noting is that defensively, he was used exclusively at first base. That was his primary position just last year with the Twins. The Marlins have been pretty clear that they want him to focus on being an everyday second baseman for this upcoming season. So that is, again, a kind of interesting type of conflict that, in a different way that Segura had, where Segura was missing playing time that would have been valuable for him, and Arraez was missing defensive reps at what is going to be a more difficult position that he'll be playing during the regular season. So right before getting into the offense, I should note, I was in attendance during the Venezuela-Puerto Rico game with Arraez at first base, where he almost suffered what could have been a significant injury trying to reach a off-target throw at first base that led him into the runner, his left arm reaching into the baseline, and his elbow getting hit by the runner who was coming down the line in that play.
On the ground to third. Backhanded there. Escobar. High throw, and the tag got him. Arraez. Hopefully he's okay.
The trainer went out for about a minute at most, and Arraez was pretty emphatic that despite initially holding that elbow and showing some discomfort, from that point forward, he waved him off and he stayed in for, I think it was the rest of that entire game, despite that injury scare. Just worth mentioning, because it was an eerily similar play as to the one that Garrett Cooper tore his UCL, you'll remember, in 2021, reaching into the runner on a throw like that. Even for very experienced first baseman, that's something that could be unavoidable, but especially for those, that's something that you're probably more susceptible to making if you're not used to the footwork necessary to reach for that ball while keeping the arm out of harm's way. So thankfully, Arraez avoided that. Venezuela was undefeated in pool play. He played in all their games, including the quarterfinal against the USA, where he hit a home run in the very first inning off of Lance Lynn, and then he added on insurance later on in that game that it seemed to put Venezuela in firm control before they eventually blow it later on. Extremely notable performance for him, because this is a guy who now is entering his fifth major league season. He's been in professional baseball as a whole for, about 9 years, if you include the minor leagues. This was Luis Arraez's first career multi-home run game at any level.
All have good numbers against Lynn. Arraez to deep right field. It is gone!
San Felipe! San Felipe, Venezuela! Levántense! Luis Arraez is here! This team has answered in a huge way.
He hammers that one down the right field line. If it's fair, it's gone. It is off the foul pole.
San Felipe. Otra vez. Venezuela. Levántense. Luis Arraez is here.
And on top of it, a bad flip for the ages.
Wow.
Overall, for Arraez, 19 plate appearances in the tournament. Yeah, I think it was 4 starts in 1 game off the bench. Hit .235, .316 on base percentage, .647 slugging with the 2 home runs. So that's not a slugging percentage you'll see for him very often in any span of time. And what also stood out is that when he made out, it was usually via strikeout. 4 strikeouts in that 19 plate appearances for Arraez. I went looking back at his past season, so it doesn't seem like much. 4 strikeouts in a 5-game span. For him, that is kind of notable. There was only really 2 stretches next to each other in late May of last season where Arraez had 4 strikeouts in a 5-game span. That's how exceptional he is. This is a guy that pretty routinely can go entire series without striking out even once. And so that maybe speaks to the quality of the pitching that he was facing, more so as I reiterated before, it speaks to the randomness of small sample sizes. I still found that amusing. There were a couple moments in this tournament where he had signature Arise hits, where he hits that single, that soft line drive at just the perfect trajectory to go above the infielders and fall in front of the outfielders. We're going to be seeing plenty of that this season. In this tiny sample, this was like a different version of Arise, where there was a little bit more swing and miss, and as I mentioned, there was unprecedented single game power that he showed against the U.S., in what was ultimately his final game of the tournament. Sticking with Venezuela, Jesús Luzardo and Emmanuel De Jesús, they pitched only once apiece in the exact same game against Israel, one of the bigger mismatches of pool play, excuse me, right there. Luzardo got the start, four innings pitched, four hits allowed, no runs, one walk, five Ks, and then De Jesús, out of the bullpen. Very similar final line for him, 3 2/3, four hits, one run, one walk, and five strikeouts. So both of them combining against a light-hitting Israel team to take care of business. Yeah, with Luzardo in here, what stood out as a continuation of the second half of the 2022 season was the quality of his changeup, how frequently he throws it, the movement that he gets on that pitch, the late dip, the way that he has reached a point where it does, out of his hand, look very similar to his fastball and very difficult to lay off. Regardless of the quality of competition, that is an important weapon for him, an extremely pleasant development. It's one reason why I have completely flipped my tune on Luzardo at this moment compared to exactly 1 year ago. I was skeptical of him as even being a major league starter entering the 2022 season. And now I feel pretty strongly that he's the second best rotation option that the Marlins have behind Sandy. I'm glad that in this one performance, he was able to show it. Very wonderful to see the kind of support that he got from family and loved ones in attendance for this. That was extremely important to him. There's the other storyline as explained by his father about Luzardo remembering attending the first WBC with Miguel Cabrera playing for Venezuela back then, and this being the final WBC that Miggy played in here in 2023, being teammates with him, a true full circle moment if there ever was one, to be in attendance for the beginning of this whole thing, and now being good enough at the right time to play alongside Miggy right in Miami for so many of his family and friends to be there for it. That was wonderful. Don't sleep on De Jesús. His stuff was looking pretty good in this one as well. Occasionally got the fastball up to about 94, I think it was, in this his lone appearance of camp. Just like Luzardo, he hadn't pitched in any of the games prior to this one. We hadn't seen a whole lot of him in Marlins camp either before this point. And unfortunately, is on the outside looking in at the opening day pitching staff for the Marlins. De Jesús will probably report to AAA, where he spent a good chunk of last year when he was with the Giants organization, if I do remember correctly. Still a very proud moment for him as well to be part of that team that was undefeated through pool play. De Jesús, for anyone not familiar, 26-year-old lefty who had spent most of his professional career with the Red Sox organization until last year when he pitched as a minor league free agent with the Giants. It would not be surprising if he's called up at some point during this upcoming season. He needs to get on the 40-man roster first. And he is, there are some similarities to the Daniel Castano type where I think you can trust him to go multiple times through an order when necessary. He has more swing and miss, though, than somebody like Castano does. So whether it's him, somebody like Devin Smeltzer, they're all kind of in the same tier of pitching depth, flexible pitching depth that you'll see throughout the season. And this was a good first impression for De Jesús, who I don't know if he had pitched a televised game in spring training prior to this. And what he showed in this, it seems sort of repeatable to what he'll face in the AAA level as part of that roster to open the season. Finally, seventh Marlins player active for the WBC, in addition to Sandy Alcantara, Gene Segura, Johnny Cueto, Luis Ariz, Jesus Luzardo, and Emmanuel De Jesus. On Puerto Rico, we had right-hander Anthony Maldonado. Only one appearance against Nicaragua during pool play, and he was very impressive. It was a perfect inning, two strikeouts, fastball, slider, and more so, the fastball is what stood out. The command that he had of that pitch and the life that it had up in the zone to make it even play higher than its 93, 94 mile per hour velocity. He had some international experience already. He was in the, he's pitched in winter ball in Puerto Rico two times in his career, and he was also in the Caribbean series for Puerto Rico going back a couple off seasons. That was sort of an appetizer for what he was experiencing in this one. What he showed was extremely impressive in that very microscopic sample. Last year, spent a lot of it with AA Pensacola, moved up to AAA Jacksonville midway through, and he was very overpowering during his time there. He's been drafted and developed by the Marlins, even though representing Puerto Rico. He is somebody that has grown up in the U.S., originally born in Wellington, and he went to school at Bethune-Cookman, 11th round draft pick in 2019. Last year in the organization, a whip right around one with 86 strikeouts and 62 and a third innings. Had a little bit of a problem with the home run ball in Pensacola, but finished the year extremely strong with Jacksonville. He's pitched a couple times in spring games prior to this, and I think we'll see him again there before the regular season begins. Like De Jesus, doesn't seem to be much wiggle room with the Marlins 40-man roster at the moment entering the season. So we would expect him to begin the season in Jacksonville and just wait for his opportunity to contribute to the pitching staff. I was really hoping that during the quarterfinal that they played against Mexico, that he would get a chance to pitch at some point during that game. Unfortunately, due to the absence of Edwin Diaz, that called upon the rest of the relievers to kind of step up in that moment. And I figured he could be one of the beneficiaries of that unfortunate absence. And we saw a lot of relievers for Puerto Rico in that one. And unfortunately, they combined to blow what was a 4-0 lead. So I wonder if that would have gone any differently if Maldonado had gotten his shot. Understandably, he was lower in the pecking order than several of the guys there that had already MLB experience and were proven at that level. Understandable. I'm going to see if I could get Maldonado onto the pod in an upcoming episode to talk about the WBC and his journey through the Marlins organization. It's been in the past. If you've been listening to this pod a long time, I've been very blunt that although the Marlins do a great job developing starting pitching in recent years, we haven't really seen that on the reliever side. It's hard to point to homegrown Marlins relievers that are having success in any sort of significant situations. You look at the makeup of their bullpen entering the season, it's veterans acquired from other organizations via trade or free agency, and mostly the former. So Maldonado could be one of those exceptions to the norm and an important part of this bullpen later this season and then for years to come afterwards. It's an important test case to see whether this development system is giving all these relievers the tools they need to have their best stuff in the limited samples that they're being used in and to repeat that stuff on a consistent basis at the highest level. Good luck to him this upcoming season. And despite the fact that we're talking about really tiny samples with a lot of these guys, I don't think any of them would regret participating. Just have one moment in front of this type of audience, both those there in person and those there remotely, to represent their countries in this process. That alone was a bucket list item for some of these players, in their own words, describing how this is on such a different level, even from major league regular season games. So the good news is that even though this was designed to be an every 4 years tournament, because of the COVID scheduling issues that they had, the next one is coming back just 3 years from now in 2026. I mean, selfishly, I hope we see it in Miami again in a similar type of setup where they host games in every single round, I think it's going to be hard to disagree that Lone Depot Park has been a great host for these games. And they've clearly, the fans have been able to show out for it, and they've been they've been reacting to it with the level of intensity that everybody could hope for, to create environments that we obviously don't get for any Marlins regular season games. This has been, I can't recommend enough for those of you listening to it, whether it's on Monday morning, sometime on Monday, or even Tuesday morning, if you get a chance to attend these final couple games and haven't done so already at this point in the tournament, I highly encourage you to do it. It is completely different from a regular season environment. Even if you're just going as a neutral observer, even if your country is no longer in it or playing in that particular game that you're attending, the vibes that everybody else brings into this is something that's almost foreign to the American baseball experience, and in a good way, in such a good way, like treating these games with as if they have the biggest stakes possible for a sport that we're used to consuming as having almost no stakes on a daily basis because of the length of the season. This is the opposite end of the spectrum, and it is glorious. It is so glorious. So we'll find out on the other side of this recording whether or not the U.S. is actually going to win it. That was my prediction coming into it. If you watch Fish Stripes Live, you saw that we made some predictions entering the tournament as to who would win. Total crapshoot, as I keep reiterating because of the small sample, but fun nonetheless. And I'm, again, just grateful that I got to attend it while I made my trip down to South Florida recently. So this has been the official show, the first episode in a while, but it won't be a long wait until the next one. Twice weekly here on the Fish on First podcast channel, we are now part of the Fans First Sports Network. So subscribe wherever you get your pods. Ratings and reviews, greatly appreciated. Your feedback, always appreciated. You know where to find me, wherever you find Fish Stripes, and also my personal Twitter account, at RealEly, E-L-Y. You can follow me there and give us the feedback to make this the best podcast channel possible for Miami Marlins fans. As I shake off my solo podcasting rust, I promise that these episodes are going to be even more fulfilling for you and more insightful moving forward. I appreciate your support anyway. This has been Eli Sussman. Go Fish.